Welcome to Acorn to Oak, a tree podcast rooted in real stories and growing knowledge from soil to canopy. When it comes to planting trees, it's not just about picking something that looks good. It's about choosing the right tree for the right place. Diversity plays a huge role in long-term health of our urban canopy, from resilience against pests and disease to creating landscapes that thrive over time. In this episode, we're talking about why variety matters and exploring some tree options that can make a big impact in the spaces where we live and work. So, Ash, I see you brought in one of your energy drinks today. Still, still hitting the caffeine pretty hard.
I am.
Yeah.
Yep. It's a constant ebb and flow.
We all backslide.
Yep.
All right, Ash. Like to talk about some trees today. You ready to dive into this?
Tiny oaks.
All right. When we're planting trees in urban spaces, we're often working with limited room, compacted soils, and a higher pH. How does that change the way we should think about tree selection?
Well, around here, we just want to make sure that we're looking at all three of those factors, and we're not setting a tree up for failure by planting it in a spot where it can't succeed. So if you plant it directly under power lines, eventually it's going to get cut in half, or it's going to get pruned heavily around whatever obstruction is right next to it or above it, or the roots are going to cause uplifting for hardscape. And that's whenever you think about planting next to things or with size constraints, you don't want to think about could I make this work if I were taking care of it, which I don't think is a question that a lot of people ask. Yeah. Because they don't want to create work for themselves. Usually when people do that, they're just not asking the question at all.
Yeah.
At least for me, because my impulse is, well, I'll just prune it, you know, I'll keep it contained.
Yeah.
And maybe that's not something that a lot of people run into, but you also want to think about the fact that trees will outlive you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you may move on, and then the next person might decide to cut the tree down.
Or to let it grow outside of its boundaries.
Yeah. Yep. And let it get so wild that removal is the only option. And then when it comes to basic or degraded soils, there's kind of a scale. Some trees are really sensitive to urban conditions. Some are not. Now, rather than going to one extreme or the other, like there are some trees that are not very tolerant of urban conditions, but they're ecological powerhouses that provide lots of benefits to wildlife and insects. And then on the other end, you've got invasives or exotics that are not invasive. They're going to do extremely well. So you can think of like a calorie pear, right? Around here, generally they grow really well, and they look pretty healthy, at least until they run into structural issues.
Yeah.
Or an even better example would be a tree that's not invasive, like a ginkgo biloba. They're not really going to provide many benefits for wildlife, but they're super hardy. And in some contexts, that might even be a good selection if you really are not going to be likely to have success with anything else. But I think what I'm kind of trying to argue today is there is a sweet spot where you can find native trees that are pretty resilient, especially there are some newer species that have been selectively bred to have some of the traits that we're looking for, like narrow form, resistance to compacted soils and road salts, still produce mast, foliage that is ecologically fitted, that's still going to provide for insect food webs, things like that.
Well, let's get into some of these specific varieties then. What is it and why is it a good fit for a tighter urban space?
a topic that I've been thinking a lot about recently is there are a lot of species that are good species here in town, but they're massively overrepresented. The big one that jumps to my mind is red maples here in town. Maples make up like a quarter of the canopy. In order to have a resilient population to like pests and diseases that are moving in from around the world, we want to have a wide variety and diversity amongst the population.
That makes sense.
And there's nothing that holds a candle to oak trees mm-hmm. in terms of the ecological benefits that they provide. And because size is often a constraint that a lot of people face, I feel like trying to find oak species that are maybe not native to like our county, mm-hmm. but are native to the state.
Okay.
Like a little further out, or even like regionally, like there are some species that are native to Illinois, so not that far away, that aren't well represented here, but could still provide a lot of benefits and kind of fit that niche, because there's tons of spaces that you can't plant a full-sized oak tree.
Yeah,
it'll
yeah.
definitely outgrow the space. And you'll see it around, like people try.
Yeah,
They try and do it.
There's a couple neighborhoods in Bloomington here who are lined with like mature oaks. And I do have to say, like, if the space is there, that is a pretty majestic way to line your streets.
Yeah, there's a couple neighborhoods with pin
yeah.
oaks,
yeah,
especially.
Yeah.
Because pin oaks are like the fastest growing oaks around here.
Okay.
You know, I mean, they're great trees, but if you're going to plant an oak, you kind of want to stay away from northern red oaks and pin oaks.
Okay.
At least around here, because they're so well represented.
Yeah. So it's eliminating that diversity that we're looking for.
Yeah. So, and there are other good options, you know. Most of the white oaks are not as popular, at least in terms of like the inventories that have been done around here.
Yeah. And we're talking in the urban environment, not necessarily like in the surrounding wooded areas of Monroe yeah. County.
Yeah. There's lots of white oaks
yeah.
out in the forest, right? I mean, if I'm planting an oak, I usually am thinking about either like a bur oak or a swamp white oak. For the full size trees.
Yeah.
But if you can, or let's say you have a moderate amount of space, but you can't plant a full size tree, or yeah. you don't want to. You know, there's a lot of people that they have a little more space, but they're like, I want something that will stay a little more contained mm-hmm. or maybe grow a little bit slower. A lot of times American yellowwood is a good option, or like a black gum mm-hmm. could be a good fit. I am starting to experiment with post oaks. Which are not native to this county specifically, but a little further out they are.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see how post oaks will grow in our soils. They tend to like slightly more acidic soils, but they're about the right size for a lot of these contexts.
Mm-hmm. What is then, their mature size?
They're like a medium tree. Okay. So in a lot of, I was just over, not too long ago, over at Garden of the Gods, and they have pretty sandy, rocky soils that are kind of elevated, and they stay pretty small, like 30 feet tall. Blackjack oaks are another kind of medium-sized oak that I'm going to be experimenting with mm-hmm. over time, which there are some around Bloomington that seem to be doing well. The one that I'm really excited about is dwarf chinquapin oaks. So they also like more sandy soils, but it's an oak tree that has all the benefits of the bigger oaks, mm-hmm. but you can fit them into tighter spaces because okay. they stay pretty small.
So you said they like sandy soil. If we're talking specifically around the region, you know, that we're living in, obviously we have more clay style soil. How would a chinquapin, like a dwarf chinquapin oak, do in an urban environment with more clay soil?
Well, I think they're going to be less resilient to the highly degraded soils.
Okay.
Like if it's all clay, mm-hmm. if you want to try and introduce a tree like that, a smaller tree, which for a smaller tree, it's easier to improve the soil than if you're planting a huge tree.
Yeah.
Because then it's you have to do a lot of work to try and remediate the area. So the keys to making a tree like that succeed are likely going to be removing any turf right around it to reduce competition for water demand. I mean, what I'm doing, like on my own property, to try and get my dwarf chinkapins that I've planted around my yard, is like I remove all the sod, put mulch down, mixing compost and biochar to kind of build the soils up, and then planting a few native herbaceous plants around that. If you can supplement with water. So you don't really want to do this if you're not going to water, at least for quite a while, to make sure that they all have enough water, because those other plants you planted around the...
are going to take up some of the water.
They're going to take that water.
What's the benefit slow down of those its growth. Plants?
They can help to restore the quality of the soil.
Okay.
If it's a degraded site. So,
okay.
So they will reintroduce carbon into those soils and kind of create like an interconnected rhizosphere in that immediate area. So that's kind of going above and beyond. With a dwarf chinkapin, you have to be fairly selective, right? You don't want to just be throwing these along, you know, I call them like tree graves.
Yeah.
The tree wells, you know, middle of downtown, like they're not likely to succeed. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But for people's backyards where they can give them a little more love and care, I think that they could potentially be a pretty good option.
So soil and establishment, they're going to be a more difficult variety than some of the other species. But if you're looking for something small and adding diversity to your lawn, that would be an amazing choice is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. And it's a state endangered species.
Okay. Even better to get it in your yard.
Yeah. But it's not endangered if you zoom out from the state.
Okay.
So some species that are on like the IUCN red list, for example, you can't collect seed, you can't propagate without special permissions because they're so threatened or endangered.
Okay.
But this is one that you can help provide some stability for the species in general, because they do have, I mean, a lot of these plants that are endangered or threatened, they are that way because they have kind of narrow environmental restrictions that they're a sweet spot that they like. It's possible to grow them in our area.
So you mentioned post oak was another variety. How does it tolerate our urban setting?
I don't know.
You don't know? Okay.
No. So that one, so I'm going to be experimenting.
Oh, that one's an experiment. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that blackjack oaks can do well. I mean, I've seen blackjack oaks around town that are doing well. But post oaks, I really don't know. So I'll report back here in about 10 years, see if I can get some post oaks to grow.
So out of comparison, I guess, the post oak and the blackjack oak, you said grow like between 40 to 50, 30 to 50 feet tall. Could you name a tree that we see every day that would be that same height, just to give us a visual on the mature growth of those trees? It's like for the average person, I feel like somebody's like, oh, it's 50 feet tall. And you're like, well, that seems really big.
Yeah. I mean, there are like non-native pines that will grow. I'm just looking at trees in the landscape that are like...
Well, I guess what's the height of a white oak?
A lot of white oaks around here, if they're at full maturity, they'll be like 80 feet tall oftentimes.
Okay.
So
it's about half the size of a standard oak that we see in our forests.
Yeah. So if you think about like an Eastern red cedar, right? A lot of times they'll grow to like 30, you know, the really big ones might get to 40 at max maturity, but pretty rare to see an Eastern red cedar that big. Like a yellowwood. Yellowwoods stay pretty small in general. They can creep up there once they get to maturity. But, you know, a lot of these species we don't really see at full maturity because environmental conditions are so rough in cities. And they're not represented in our forests around here. Part of the message that I'm trying to get out to people whenever I'm asked about planting is, you know, it's not a bad idea to choose species that are like small or medium trees. You know, people want to just like swing for the fences, go for the biggest trees, you know. And in a lot of spaces, there's just not room. And we still want a nice green environment around us.
Yeah.
And there's lots of good options.
If we think about real places, and we'll stick here with Bloomington, Indiana, just because that's where you and I are currently living. let's think about our narrow downtown streets, the older neighborhoods here throughout Bloomington, our campus, and even like new developments. Can you give some examples on how these oaks we've talked about today could fit into those local landscapes, just to give us all a little visual on these specific varieties?
Like I kind of said earlier, like dwarf chinquapins, I think those are going to be a good fit for any area where you might have previously considered like putting a red bud,
okay,
or like a dogwood or a serviceberry, which those are all good species.
Mm-hmm.
But like a dwarf chinquapin, you know, a lot of times they're going to top out at around 20 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And if the soil conditions aren't perfect for that tree, they're going to grow even slower and stay even smaller. So, you know, if you have a little backyard area where like height is a concern, mm-hmm, or there's plants nearby, it could be a good spot for like a dwarf chinquapin. In downtown areas, what we're seeing a lot more often is columnar varieties.
Okay, yeah, we've seen those around.
So a lot of times height really isn't the limiting factor.
Mm-hmm.
What is limiting trees and their ability to grow is the width of the canopy.
Okay.
There's lots of different columnar varieties of native trees. It's not a problem to plant cultivars,
mm-hmm,
or hybrids, as long as, I think what I heard that was identified as like kind of the limiting factor, mm-hmm, for a lot of plants, because people are like, well, this is a cultivated variety. I'm concerned that like insects won't even be able to access this tree
or
use it for what they need. As long as the foliage is still green or is the right color.
Mm-hmm.
So I've heard where you run into issues is if you're planting like a purple variety, like a purple beech or like a purple red bud, insects aren't going to identify that as a food source as readily. You know, I mean, there's a lot of like columnar elms,
mm-hmm,
or like the two oak species that are really popular nowadays. Well, really, I mean, one is what I see often is the regal prince oak around here. So they get fairly tall,
mm-hmm,
you know, at maturity, they can reach like 50 feet tall, but they stay fairly compact laterally, which is really nice. Now you can run into some pruning concerns down the line because they grow with one central lead that runs all the way up the stem. And then you get kind of spindly splay out from that central leader. Sometimes if those get overloaded, they can kind of droop out.
Okay.
And it looks pretty bad if they start to droop out.
So yeah.
Then you just need to do some, oftentimes you'll have to take like a lift, you know, for people that do tree care.
I guess that was my question was, what should people expect for long-term maintenance if they were to plant a columnar variety in their yard?
The idea behind selectively breeding these columnar varieties, mm-hmm, is that they'll be lower maintenance
than
other trees, right? So like they are fairly resistant.
Mm-hmm.
So like we'll take the Regal Prince, for instance. It's a hybrid of the swamp white oaks and English oaks.
Okay.
So you're getting kind of the best of both worlds there, mm-hmm, where they're still pretty resistant to city conditions. Now, just because a tree is resistant to city conditions doesn't mean that you don't want to give it some love, mm-hmm, in terms of the soil. Because if soils are bad enough, any tree is going to suffer. But yeah, I'm trying to promote these improvements in tree selection and cultural practices, to make things better slowly, incrementally over time, so that we can get more little oak trees, and not just oaks, right? Other species that are small, that are, mm-hmm, actually well fitted to the spaces. And
I personally am glad that you've shared these species, because I was unaware of like the dwarf variety of a chinquapin, or recently had just, you know, discovered the columnar oaks. So it's good to open everybody's mind to what varieties are out there and can be selections like for our urban landscapes.
Yeah, I wish I had more experience with seeing some of these species grow long term, you know, which I'm going to collect that over time, right? A lot of this stuff I've just read in books.
Okay.
And it's kind of hypothetical at this point. Yeah, I want to see. I'm just going to keep reiterating. I'm going to experiment with different species, and you know, that's how we improve these things slowly over time.
Yeah, I mean, living here in Indiana and obviously just anywhere in the United States, I mean, we're very well aware of not having a diverse landscape in trees, how detrimental that can be when something like emerald ash borer comes around, or, I mean, ash are still around, but declining. So it's like diversifying, so we're not left with a barren landscape if something were to strike a certain variety of tree.
Yeah, I mean, and just as important as identifying, because you don't have to, if you're trying to pick the right tree, you don't have to pick the exact, like, optimal species.
Yeah.
But there are some trees that you kind of want to avoid, right? Anything that's invasive, there's no reason why you can't avoid exotic trees, you know? And people think if you're really beating the native drum, that it's kind of an expression of, like, I've heard people say that it's kind of like a xenophobic thing. People in, like, the permaculture space.
Yeah.
Or that we're never going to get rid of all the invasives or the exotics. So why even plant. Why even try?
Yeah.
Like, it's a losing battle, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not convinced by any of those arguments. I mean, I think it's clear as day. You plant a nice oak tree, be it small or large, you're doing way more for your home or for that whole area as to, you know, putting something in that's just, it's an ecological desert, you know, it's a tiny organism that is, it's either fitted or it's not fitted. And it has a world of difference. People just don't see it with their eyes.
Yeah.
You know, or they just walk by these trees and they don't think about it day in and day out. It does. I mean, it makes a huge difference. And if we can get information out there about, like, you know, hey, don't plant maples. They're way overrepresented here, right? Don't plant pear trees. We don't need any more pin oaks or northern red oaks, right?
Yeah.
We've got tons of them at this point. Or, you know, like, hey, hickories are super underrepresented in the cities, right? I mean, they're still all over the place in the forests around here. But if you have a nice wide open area, you know, hickories are not a bad option. And I don't think anybody's planting hickories. I mean, you really don't see any of them in town anymore.
Well, I know. I'm glad that you're sharing all this, because I think the general population, you know, wouldn't even have realized that, you know, we have a large pin oak population, or what we have too much or too little of within the community. So it's too bad we don't have, like, a easy resource out there to know, you know, what we should be planting or what we should be avoiding.
Well, there kind of is. So the DNR posts a list, and I think they published one a few months ago.
Okay.
I think she left DNR not too long ago, but Mads worked on putting out a list.
Awesome.
For DNR for the state, and then the city also has, like, an approved list of good species.
So listeners within this area could go to the City of Bloomington website and see what's good, what's bad to plant in their yards, and in a broader spectrum, the state of Indiana, go to the DNR site.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's lots of good information. If you look at Purdue's website, they have lots of good information on different tree species. And yeah, you can always also just look at ChatGPT.
Down with AI.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I don't even need a friend anymore. I can just talk to my friend Chat. Yeah, no, it is a helpful resource for expanding knowledge, I would say. Like, if you know the right questions to ask, it can be a good resource. So, Ash, thank you for sharing this knowledge. I have a pretty diverse landscape at my house, but that's just because, you know, my husband and I are both, like, plant and tree nerds. And so we, like, just have a million different varieties that we find amazing, and we've planted them all over our property. Yeah, I think our listeners are going to enjoy hearing some new selections of trees that they can maybe look up and see if they're right fit for their urban landscape.
For sure. Yeah. And it makes it really nice. You know, you go out to your place and you can feel it. You can feel all the nature around you. And that's kind of what we're working towards, is, like, increasing awareness in people, you know, so that they feel more connected to where they live and work every day.
Tree selection and diversity are such an important part of creating healthy, meaningful landscapes. When we think beyond a single tree and look at how different species work together, we start building environments that are more resilient, more interesting, and more natural. These choices shape how a space grows over time. Thanks so much for sharing, Ash.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Acorn to Oak. If you enjoyed today's story or learned something new, join us next time as we keep growing tree knowledge from acorn to oak.